Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to thank and pay our respects to the elders, past, present, and emerging. Hello, everyone, and welcome to CeroBoost, the Happiness Science Insights podcast, produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We are champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I'm your host, Lu Ngo, coming to your ears from NARM, Melbourne, Australia. Let's learn together.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to CeroBoost, the show where we talk about all things happiness. It's been a while since I got back into the studio, so I'm excited today. And today we're talking about joy, so it's even better. I'm trying to find more joy in my life. I don't know about you, but I'm sure we all are. So today I'm talking to Nancy Collier, and I'm really excited because she has a really interesting background, and I would love for her to introduce herself to our audience in a little bit. But about Nancy, just in case you're wondering, Nancy is a psychotherapist, interfaith minister, author, public speaker, and mindfulness teacher. A longtime student of Eastern spirituality, mindfulness practices form the ground of her work. She is the author of the recently published The Emotionally Exhausted Woman, and before that, Can't Stop Thinking. In addition, she spent 25 years as a top-ranked equestrian on the National Horse Show circuit and serves as a performance consultant to competitive athletes, professional artists, and corporate executives. It was my first time hearing the word equestrian, so I had to ask Nancy. It's not like a familiar concept to me, and this is such an interesting background that you have, Nancy. So thank you for being here, and thank you for bearing with us through all the technical difficulties earlier.
Always delighted to be here, and I'm used to it. That's what we do these days, right?
Yeah,
it's great that we can talk tech.
Yeah, and it's great that we can talk even though we're on opposite ends of the world. You know, like, it's evening for you, it's morning for me. I still find it wonderful that we can make this happen.
It's amazing. Always is amazing. Yes.
Yeah. So please tell us a bit more about yourself, because you have a very interesting background, you know, like a long history of different kinds of work. And now you're here today to talk about joy. So what's the connection there, and why did you get to do the work that you do? It's so interesting to me. I'm still trying to piece it together.
Yeah. Well, you know, I started in the horse business, and it really drew me because it felt joyous. I loved to ride. I was always a serious athlete. And, but as I became more competitive, I got really interested in what is it when, let's say, two riders are both incredibly talented physically, but one of them wins and one of them doesn't. And I started to get really interested in mind states that allowed for top performance. And I built a little company, The Winning Edge, and started to study sports psychology and performance psychology and so on. And over time, I also got very interested in what's called the flow state. That state, yes, where many of us know that term now, where there is no more separate me who's a rider. There's just the riding. And I'm so immersed in the experience of the ride that there ceases to be this separation. And that felt like the deepest joy I had ever known, where I am not this entity observing what's happening or trying to do well. I'm just like the raindrop disappearing into the ocean. I've become timeless. So for me, you know, this joy got linked really with this loss of separate self and flow. And then I went back to school and got some degrees so that I could work with people and understand their minds and help guide them towards not just that state of performance, but the state of this incredible just joining the experience itself.
Wow. That's such an interesting story. Sounds wonderful. I've got into watching more sports lately. So when you said that, you know, you got to do a bit more work on the sports front, I was kind of like, oh, that's so interesting. Because I wonder what goes on in athletes' mind when they, you know, when they do all these different activities, when they're under so much pressure, right. You know, when,
well,
when
the... Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you know, the one aspect of it is, you know, sort of what you're doing to win and all of that and the pressure. But there's something also really magical about what happens when you achieve excellence, which is you can stop sort of focusing on the details and relax and let the things happen because you've done the work.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a writer, so I've always written my whole life. I write to process things. I write to understand things. I've written 5 books and thousands of other things. But writing always has that quality, for example, of there's a lot of mind in it. You have to go back and forth between mind and then something deeper. Whereas there's a quality to sport or performance or anything you do with excellence that is your surrender. And all you have to do is do the work, do the work, and then let go. And that for me is the experience of joy. Again, joy.
Yeah. So fascinating. And we're going to talk about joy more in a little bit, very soon. Before we go into that, we would love to get to know you more. And we have a section called Have You Met Nancy?
Yeah.
So in this section, we're going to get some recommendation from you. I love this section because I get to know my guests better while adding to my list of things to check out. So let's go into that. First of all, what is a book you would recommend?
Well, I can only recommend my own book.
Yeah, absolutely. Which one?
The Emotionally Exhausted Woman. I think it is so relevant right now. And the feedback that I am getting from the numerous workshops and talks that I'm giving is phenomenal. It's heartbreaking. But women these days are really burnt out. Really burnt out. And not just because we don't say no, and not just because we carry the emotional labor, but because of early conditioning and abandoning ourselves and learning to be people pleasers and learning that our value is in our ability to take care of others. So I am really passionate about helping women and men too. This is not just a women's issue, but we are trained heavily to take care of and be whatever anyone needs from us. So I'm recommending that book. And another book that, you know, I just always return to is a book called True Refuge by Tara Brach. Anything by Tara and anything by Pema Chodron for me is deeply powerful and healing. They're spiritual teachers, and Tara is a psychologist as well, but they really point you in the direction of well-being. And that's what I'm attempting to do, not just to empower women, but find a deeper state of well-being.
Yeah, wow, that's wonderful. As I mentioned to you, we also have a show on well-being. So this is really interesting insights for us to definitely keep in mind. And that's a book, but you actually gave us many. So great. Thank you for that. I love reading.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Now that you've mentioned it, I have to check it out because, this is also close to my heart. And I'm sure a lot of our audience would feel the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dropping out of our authentic self to be what's wanted, you know, giving up authenticity so that we can be likable. It's heartbreaking and it depletes us and we lose touch with that still small voice that who we are. And I really am interested in bringing women back home to inhabit themselves.
Yeah, totally. What a wonderful message. Thank you. So next one on our list is a movie. Which movie would you recommend?
Wow. That one, when I saw that question, I love movies. I'm a huge movie fanatic. So that one was just incredibly challenging for me to lock it in. But I think that, you know, I'm going to look at the movies that I've seen just recently. And there was a movie that I saw. It really moved me. It's The Life of Others, and not incredibly recently, but it was about the human journey. It was about the challenge of our complexity, you know, the miracle and catastrophe that we all are, and beautiful script and all, just a richness of character. So I'm going with that one.
Yeah, sounds great. I haven't watched it, so I have to definitely add it to my list. Yeah. Thank you. So you're on a podcast today as a guest. I wonder which podcast you listen to the most.
Do you know, I am going to tell you a secret. I don't listen to podcasts.
A lot of our guests say that as
yes,
well.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know why? Because I am teaching what I need to learn. In other words, I am overbooked. I am a fellow uber competent woman who has difficulty saying no. I have learned through this process. We write what we need to learn. And I am so over busy with teaching and with seeing patients and with two yummy daughters and a husband and a dog and workshops around the country, that when there is a moment of space, the last thing on earth I want to hear are words.
Yeah, so. I totally get that. Yeah, it happened to quite a few of our guests as well, because some of them host podcasts, you know, some of them do focus on their work a lot and they don't listen to podcasts, they don't consume such contents. And it's totally understandable when you're so busy doing other activities. So
well, and let's also, go to the next. There's another, one other thing about that too, which is I feel like we live, and I really address this a lot in Can't Stop Thinking and also in The Power of Off, the book before Can't Stop Thinking. But we're so inundated with contents, with stuff, with learning, with information. We even call ourselves the information age, that I think there's something incredibly healing about the sound of silence.
Yeah, totally.
Not feeling every moment with more contents and learning, which really sometimes is just a mask for more running away from ourselves.
Totally. Yeah. So let's go to the next one. Who's your famous role model? Or if not a famous person, then your personal role model?
My personal role model, I think at the moment, I really appreciate I appreciate the way Pema Chodron and Tara Brach live their life. I do. They're both spiritual teachers, and they walk the walk. They are the thing. And also one other, Mirabai Starr, a spiritual teacher here in the States. And why I look up to them is that they don't get lost in all of this sort of branding and, selling, and yet they are incredibly powerful voices and heard and known by so many. But they all three of them, Tara Brach, Mirabai Starr, Pema Chodron, they walk with such integrity. And that for me is such a beautiful thing to see. They are who they are, and they are so wise.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And finally, what is a course that you've completed that you would like to talk about?
The course that I completed that I'd like to talk about is, I'd like to talk about giving my own, the course that I give, because this is, again, where my heart is. It's in this learning to what are the steps that we can do to take care of ourselves. So, you know, we're pointed in the direction always of go to the spa, right? You know, pamper, do all of this. And in the workshop I give, and of course I take it too through my participants, I'm nourished as well. But what we're talking about, and it really is co-created, so I consider it a class that I'm taking, is we're learning what are the real steps that invite us back into our lives, that really replenish us from all of this depletion. And I really mean that when I say that that's a class I'm taking, because every group of women and men too that I sit in front of and begin as teacher, I end up as student.
Yeah, I really love that. I love that concept of co-creating the content and learning together, because that's so important to education. So thank you for sharing that. And now we're going to go into the topic of the day. And today we're talking about why finding joy takes effort. This is super interesting to me. And I think our audience would find that interesting too, because we probably don't think about joy in that complexity. Before we get into talking about joy, let's talk about happiness, because this show is about happiness. So to you, Nancy, what does happiness mean?
Happiness for me is being in the present moment. It's giving up the fight with the present moment. That for me feels like happiness. When I stop having an agenda for now, and I just meet what's coming. You know, we spend so much energy fighting with, trying to figure out, trying to fix, trying to sort of navigate the present moment with this one thought in mind, you know, how do I shore up this project of me? How do I, you know, make myself look better? How do I, you know, get across my, whatever that is. And there's something so happy to me. And it crosstalks with joy, of course, about just being where we are without an agenda. That feels happy. And, you know, when I think about things that delight me, I think about, you know, the way the light hits the tree outside my office, or I think about a belly laugh with my daughter, or I think about, you know, a yummy coffee frozen yogurt, right? I mean, these are delights, right? I think about that first spring warm breeze. And that's delight, but happiness has, it has something to do with I'm happy when I land here. No matter what the contents are. I mean, it's paradoxical. Even if the contents are not necessarily what I want, if I'm here and I'm really in it, in my senses and in the present moment, there's a deep happiness.
Yeah, I really love that definition. It's quite different from what I've heard on the show so far. But I do agree with the aspect of, you know, just being really present and having no agenda. That's because it. I think in life, there's so much that we do because we have to achieve certain things, or because we have to tick the boxes. And even to me, like, you know, doing the work that I do, I love my job, but sometimes I'm like, am I doing the job because I love my job, or am I doing my job to pay the bills? So there's like, you know, that kind of fine line where I'm kind of like, I need to focus on the aspect that makes me happy. Otherwise I wouldn't enjoy it. It wouldn't be sustainable. So yeah, having no agenda truly brings happiness in all activities. So I really, really love your definition.
Good. Yes. And live by that, right? We find happiness in the simplest things, you know, awe in the simplest things. You really look at a flower, not through your mind of when is that flower going to bloom and what's the name of it and, oh, you know, that is crossbred with that. No, really look at the simple thing. That dog wagging its tail, that's happy. It's in the simplicity.
Yeah, absolutely. So with your definition, I think there's a really big emphasis on being present, cherishing the little things, living with no agenda. And I guess this might not be the case for a lot of people, because each of us has our own misconceptions when it comes to happiness. So in your line of work, what are some of the biggest misconceptions about happiness that you've noticed?
Well, I think that happiness is seen somehow as how we're always supposed to be, right? And that if you're not happy all the time, that you're failing at life. And so everyone walks around feeling incredibly inadequate because they're not super happy every minute. So one of the things that I do with clients is we have to reframe what happy means. Happy is really more a state of well-being, of wellness. You know, we use these words in so many distorted ways, but there's this idea that we're supposed to be happy and, you know, sort of sparkly. And the truth is life contains all of it. It contains moments that we get what we want, contains moments we don't get what we want. And what we want to find really for equanimity is a state of happiness that can include all of it. So one big misunderstanding is that you're failing if in moments there isn't something sort of sparkly happening in your life. I think too that there's, and so that happiness should be some sort of constant state. So happiness comes and goes to some degree, right? If we talk about it in a standard sense, you know, oh, we get the thing we want, we get the job, or we're going on a vacation, or all this sort of, you know, external stuff. But that's going to move and flow and change. What we're wanting is a state of, I'm good, I'm okay, I'm well, when I'm getting what I want or I'm not getting what I want. So that's deeper than happiness. Coming to, again, a more standard understanding of happiness, it's kind of like, this is fun. This is fun. I like this moment, right? Whereas well-being and joy, they live at a deeper level. But I'd like happiness to take on the aroma of the deep level as well, which is I'm happy, I'm well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think coming to today's topic, when it comes to joy, a lot of people are kind of probably confused about the difference or the overlaps between joy and happiness because, you know, these are terms that we throw around quite a bit. So because you study this area, I think you have a whole book on it. Yes. It'll be great to hear from you. What do you think the connection between joy and happiness is and how we can sort of not really compartmentalize them, but understand them better.
Yeah. So, you know, using again, I'm always trying to reframe happy and really sink it into joy and sink it into well-being. But if we really just sort of look at it, happiness is temporary. Happiness is about the moment and something pleasurable. That's really what happiness is. And joy lives in this place of part of something larger. For the most part, when we're experiencing joy, we're experiencing a connection to something larger. And whatever that is, nature, another human being, an animal, God, whatever is your version of that, joy has this really deep bass note. You know, if you think about it, happiness is more treble. It's up in the da, 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 da. And then joy is down here in the belly. It's all is well, right? This is fun, is happiness. All is well is the joy place. And that there's a trust in often with joy being held or taken care of by something larger.
Wow, that's a very interesting concept. I will have to digest that and really think about it because I think it's better to think about that in context, you know, when you go through lives rather than just saying, yep, I get it, but not really. So I'll have to take that with me and really digest that. But I think in the sense of today's topic, we also want to talk about the effort in, you know, finding joy, because that's what we're here to talk about. Finding joy takes effort, and we want to kind of discuss why that is. So I know you've covered like joy and happiness, the difference and how you embrace it. But why do you think it is so hard for us in general to find joy?
Such a good question. I think that we're so trapped up in our heads. You know, we are such a mental world now. And the more information we throw at ourselves, the more stuck above the net we are. And we walk around as these sort of little floating heads. I talk about this in the Can't Stop Thinking book, little floating heads, disconnected from our feet, disconnected from our embodiment, right? Joy lives in the body. Despair lives in the mind. So, you know, the mind is not really capable of joy. When we feel joy, it's like a bodily experience. So this incredible focus on our thinking and our thoughts and information, and everything has to make sense and be rational and evidence-based, and all of this is not a recipe for joy. It's a recipe for a lot of knowing, but not the deepest kind of knowing. When we're in joy, we're at a different level of knowing. We know something that transcends thinking.
Yeah.
So that's the primary reason I would say that we have so much trouble with joy, because we're living in the wrong neighborhood for joy.
Yeah. That is so interesting. Yeah, you mentioned your book and you talked a little bit about the sort of effort that we need in finding joy. Now, because we are, like you said, living in this world where it's kind of hard to filter it out, I would say, like from my understanding, it's even more important for us to understand this effort, right? Because if you're saying, hey, like we are always sort of like absorbing or choosing the wrong lane per se, it's going to take a lot of effort in general to actually, you know, steer ourselves towards the right direction, or actually to filter out what doesn't bring joy in our lives. So I think the concept of effort here is really important. And effort is something that we talk about all the time, but in the sense of finding joy, I'm pretty sure there's a whole other world when it comes to effort. So can you please elaborate on this concept of effort, and also, you know, how can we actually leverage that? You know, once we've understood it, how do we bring that into our daily lives?
Well, first is awareness, right? First is the recognition that you're not going to figure out how to get to joy. It's like opening a lock with a banana. It's the wrong tool. So, you know, recognizing, oh, all the methods that I have, you know, are not taking me to that place. I might find a little happiness here, a relief here, but this deep experience of all is well that comes with joy, it's not going to come through more effort through the mind. So we first just recognize that. Been doing all this work to get to joy and I'm not getting there. So, okay, great. And then we want to start to reframe to where joy lives. You know, in our culture, not only are we incredibly mentally focused, right? Thinking, more information makes sense. It's all about reason. Everything is about one kind of knowing, mind knowing, which is really important and a great kind of, I went to a million schools. I know a lot in terms of that, but it's not going to take you to joy. So what we want to start to understand is that joy is not about putting together the right set of circumstances, achieving the right thing, getting the right resume, getting the right boyfriend, getting the right things in your life. It's still not that. That joy is more about really changing the paradigm, that joy lives inside you already, but there's a lot of stuff in the way. And part of what's in the way is this idea that it's external. We're going to go chase it, and we're going to find it, and we're going to track it down, and we're going to handcuff it, and then we're going to purchase it, and then we're never going to let it go. But that's not how life is, right? So it's the turning again towards, wait a minute, it's more about what's in the way of my joy, all this thinking and all of this chasing and all of this sort of external focus, and turning back towards ourselves. And, you know, what we talked about before, Lou, in the sense of fighting the way it is in this moment, right? That it's really counterintuitive. We think that the way to get to joy is to fight it hard enough, what we don't like, that we get the circumstances we want. But it's quite the opposite. It's what we talked about in the sense of letting go of the fight, being actually in what is. That is, paradoxically, what we're never taught, which is the giving up of trying to make it different, right? And inherently, it changes anyway. And also the effort in finding joy has to do with noticing and being appreciative. Being appreciative, you know, when your partner makes you dinner at the end of a long day, you know, stopping for a moment and just feeling that appreciation. It's a little different than gratitude, because gratitude has become now a thing, right? We're supposed to make 100 gratitude lists. It's another should on our to-do list, right? Oh, I didn't do my gratitude list, right? And then we sort of force these things. I'm grateful for water, because some people don't have, well, am I really grateful for what? Never not had water. I'm grateful because it's not subarctic. Am I really? So it becomes this whole sort of other thing we have to do. I like to think about the effort around, can I just be mindful of when I feel that little bit of appreciation? Wow, my friend smiled at me and told me she loves hanging out with me. And just stop for a quick second. Can be 3 seconds, 2 seconds, one. Notice when you appreciate. And, you know, it's so simple, but the effort in joy is a bit like what you were talking about with your job and so on, which is design a life where you do things you enjoy doing. There's that word, enjoy, right? We do so much of our life because we should, and because of who we think it makes us seem to be, the identity that it provides for us. But do we want to really, not should, but do we want to spend our day this way? We've got to unlock the want, not just the should. So little things like designing your day where there are a lot of things that you enjoy.
Totally. Such a great point, because I think when you talked about, you know, getting trapped inside our head and also just really forgetting that it's already within us, I was kind of like, you know what? That's true.
Mm-hmm. It is true.
Because I think going back to our childhood, right? We had joy all the time. There was no noise in here.
That's right.
That's how I would see it, because there's this like big element of, wow, like the sense of, you know, just having joy in my life. I had that so easily when I was a child. And then as I'm growing
Isn't
up, like,
curious?
You know, like, yeah, I'm absorbing so much more information. I know how to carry myself better, but the level of joy is lower.
Comes down. Yeah. And part of that is, I think, also because there's so much as we come up, which is about learning who we're supposed to be, right? To be loved, really, and how we're inadequate. And so when we're a child, again, we talked about separation in flow and non-separation, but we're not always focused on how we're being perceived when we're a child. We're just doing the thing. We're just like crayoning, or we're just like rolling around with the puppies, right? It's not about, am I good enough with this? Or will I be loved like this? Or am I being judged like this? And so our mind starts, as we get older, it starts to get filled up with all this protective instinct to protect this little me, you know, so she's not judged, so she's not rejected, so she's not abandoned, and to try and be safe. And what that does is it severs our tie again to the present moment, because we're managing if we are enough, if we deserve this, if we're being liked, if we're, it's all that. And so the beauty and the freedom in childhood is there isn't this incredibly well-developed separate self that's usually falling short. We learn that very early for many people, and has to be managed. Well, management is the, you know, the buzzkill for joy.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm just thinking about my own life right now when you said that. But I think our team found that in your book, Can't Stop Thinking, you actually really talked about this, because what you just said earlier is the thoughts that come into our mind, into our head. So in the book, you talk about the connection between thoughts and finding joy. Well, so can you please elaborate a bit more on that?
So thoughts are, again, the antithesis often of joy. It's not that we can't be thinking and be joyful. Of course we can. But when we're talking about, first of all, most people, their thoughts are creating a narrative that's not too joyful. It's usually pretty scary, or it's pretty negative, or it's in the way, yet again, of just being where we are. We're not where we are. We're lost in a narrative. We're lost in a storyline. We imagine we're in reality, but the reality is all smoke and mirrors. It's all made up in our head with our thoughts. So we've got this layer of separation between us and the present moment. If we're really in the present moment, we don't need to be thinking about the present moment. It's like wearing a raincoat when you go swimming. It's in the way of actually landing here. So yeah. Thinking about the present moment, or thinking about a tree, or thinking about your child is not the same thing as being with it. So thoughts, even if they're not negative, which for so many people they are, I mean, they're directly antithetical to joy, because they're usually telling you what's wrong with you or with someone else, or what's going to go wrong, or what you need to watch out for, or any number of sort of dangerous neighborhoods to visit, right? That if they're not directly interrupting joy, they're occupying your attention. They're taking you away from this present moment, which is happening in this body, which is happening now. They're living in Hawaii and their vacation in 6 months. They're living in the conversation with their mother from when they were 11. They're not here. And here is the only place that we can really experience joy.
Yeah. And a lot of that is actually mindfulness, isn't it? Because what you're talking about is just to be. And to be, well, we've talked about that quite a bit on this show. You know, you got to incorporate mindfulness into your daily lives, because it's actually really hard to just be. And I can attest to this myself. Yes. I'm like, oh, yeah.
It is.
To be okay, right, that right. is
the hardest
quite
thing
hard
ever. Yes
hardest thing ever. So how can we incorporate mindfulness into our lives so we can cultivate more joy?
Well, it's funny you say that. You know, being is, you know, the mind says it's too simple. I need a bone. I need to do something. We're doers. I'm a doer. What do you mean be? What am I supposed to do? So, you know, with some of the meditations I give people, I give them like a word, like blah, blah. Just say a word. It doesn't matter. It's literally throwing your mind a bone. Just give it something to do. And then you drop down to the bottom of the ocean, way away from the sort of ripples at the top, you know, of all the choppy waves. And you just experience the being place. But give it a thing, you know. And it is so not of our culture, this idea of to stop doing or just stop. We literally go into existential dread because we experience ourselves when we're thinking, oh, I'm here, right? Oh, here's Nancy. I'm thinking about this. I feel me. But when I drop out of thinking, I'm not so sure I experience myself in that same way. It's like, well, where am I? Oh, now here I am, because I'm wondering where I am. Ah, I'm back. Because we live in this little space inside our head, right? But as you practice mindfulness and drop down into the body more and more throughout the day, and just check out your senses, you know, sort of feel the presence, feel that vibration of aliveness that's just here when you're alive, right? And then maybe turn the lens and just notice what's the ticker tape going on in your mind. What are the thoughts? I mean, you don't have to believe them. You don't have to think about them. Just what's happening in the circus up here, right? That just that sort of practice over and over again starts to build a muscle that experiences yourself as more in this embodied being way. For most of us, the only way we know that we exist is when we're thinking and up here. So these mindfulness techniques of like dropping down, taking a conscious breath, you know, noticing what you're seeing, noticing what you're hearing, noticing what you're touching, all of that really sinking into this moment in a more sensorial embodied way, dropping the storylines, dropping what it means, dropping even the names of things. It is the real practice of knowing yourself in this joyful place that doesn't need thinking to know itself.
Yeah, that's a really harsh sentence to digest and understand, but yeah. I get the concept. Yeah, I think it's kind of this new world that we recently have come across, because for a lot of us, I don't know about others, but to me, like I've noticed this in my friend group, in my circles, we start to talk about mindfulness more.
Yes.
And it's so hard to, it's so hard to pay attention. Just like you said,
this is such
a new thing, but it's so important.
And
because
not to
what
be
I
distracted,
have,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. What I have found is when we have a lot going on, we kind of have this tendency to be on autopilot.
Yeah.
Like you would do something, you need to do something. Let's just say you're cooking. Okay. Cooking, not really paying attention. Next thing you know, you're putting salt instead of sugar.
You're not there.
Or vice versa. And then you're like, oh, wait, what did I just do?
Right.
And then that's where you don't really have the joy inside you is kind of blocked. Like, that's how I feel about it. Because to me, for example, cooking is really joyful, like a joyful like activity. I find joy in cooking.
Uh-huh.
But when that happens, I realize, you know what? I don't have mindfulness right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not enjoying it.
When
so
you're cooking, you're not enjoying it.
When that happened, I realized that I wasn't enjoying it. Not
yes.
It doesn't happen all the time.
Yes.
But
yes.
The opposite of
the
that
moment.
Is exactly. So when there's the opposite of that, I actually pay attention to everything I'm doing. I'm actually, you know, savoring it.
Yes.
So there's that, like, I think it's like the next level of paying attention, like you said. It's like even savoring what I'm doing. I'm like, I'm really enjoying putting pepper in here. Like, I'm really enjoying chopping these vegetables. So it's kind of like, I think those little things are things that we tend to forget.
Yes,
because little things bring joy and it's already in us. We just forget to actually enjoy
exactly.
The moment without mindfulness. That's how I see it.
I think that's beautiful. You know, when you're doing the laundry, do the laundry.
Exactly.
And
it's
so amazing because, you know, we're doing the dishes or whatever we're doing and we're in 1,000 other places and we want to get through it and we want to be done with it and we're not there. And then we end up, cracking a dish or whatever we do. But when you land where you are, it doesn't matter where you are. If you're paying fierce attention, it's always interesting. I remember because I had a lot of dental work over years and I would fight it and fight it and fight it when I was in the dental chair. And then I started to get curious. Let me actually experience. Let me be in this chair since it's not going away and I'm going to be here for my whole life. So let's just see if I can be mindful and be here. And you know what's so fascinating is what happened was, first of all, it became far more bearable. Because I got curious about the present moment. And rather than being in trying to distract myself every minute, I just gave myself one place. The thing that's happening is where I am. And that's all I needed to manage. And I was in it. And then I got interested in the pain. That's what got really curious. Like, what does the pain feel like? Is it pain? Or has there just been fear and distraction and so on? So mindfulness and joy are the same coin, different sides of it. We need to be present and paying attention if we're going to get to joy. It just doesn't happen any other way. So you're taking, you know, a walk. Be in those steps. It's so fascinating. It opens up the universe.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it depends on what's going on in our lives as well. It's not that it applies to everyone, because I think I talked to a friend yesterday, and he was kind of saying he's a little bit depressed because of what's going on in his life at the moment. And then he also talked about how much he's enjoying going to the gym. So two things exist at the same time,
of course.
But he struggles to, you know, he obviously struggled to focus on the positive side of things because there's this like black cloud hanging over his head. And I've been there myself. So I sort of thought about that time before, and I realized that, you know what, it is true. It's really hard when you're in such state of mind. But if anything, if we could actually make that effort, because we're talking about the effort of finding joy, right? Make that effort to really pay attention to whatever it is that we're doing, and know that we have the space and time to enjoy it. Even if it's a really dark time, you can find nuggets of joy there, because it's easier to just get sucked into this like spiral of thoughts, and you know, you're like, oh, like this is not going well. It's easy to get stuck in that. Or you can just take yourself out of that equation and focus on what you're doing. Right. And I also, when I talked to him, I was kind of like, maybe find things that you can actually do because you have the time now. And I was saying, you know, like, why don't you try doing things that you enjoy? Like, you know, you enjoy talking to people. So talk to people.
Enjoy
those conversations.
Yeah,
because it's kind of like redirecting the attention. Right. Obviously, you don't want to run away from reality, but I think paying attention to activities that you enjoy would curate more joy in that day. And overall, I think slowly but surely you'll get out of that state of mind, because that's how I got through the tough times. So I don't know how this applies to other people, but at least from my personal observation, that's how I would see, you know, getting out of the dark times through, making the effort, finding joy.
I think you make also another really good point there, which is we, in our culture, we really need there to be an either or, right? Either I'm depressed or I'm having a good time, right? Yeah. And, you know, we have so much trouble with both and life is both and life resolves itself in contradiction. So, you know, when we can recognize that there's darkness at a moment in our life, and then also, like you're saying so insightfully, recognize when, wow, light is here. I'm talking to someone and I'm enjoying it. So that's going to sit right alongside the sadness that's there as well. But right now, do I have the courage, or will I risk letting myself experience this joy, even knowing that the sadness is still here, right? It's almost like we become sort of loyal to the darkness, that if we allow ourselves to have the joy when the sadness is present, or whatever the depression is for someone, you know, that somehow we need to keep focusing on the depression to make it better. We need to keep living there. And then all these moments go by that we're not in because they don't match up, and they're not consistent with the state we've convinced ourselves we now are. It's not weather moving through. It just is.
Yeah. I think it's so much a choice, right? Because a lot of the times it's kind of like, oh, yeah, you know what? I'm depressed. But I think it's a choice we can make when we switch and say, I feel depressed occasionally, but I consciously, depending on how you would like to say it, but I consciously choose to find joy in this moment and enjoy my life still.
Absolutely. But we want to be careful because, you know, we get into this thing where we are choosing or not choosing joy. And it becomes very punishing, and it becomes very judgmental for a lot of people. Like this idea, I could choose joy. I could just choose joy. Why am I choosing depression? And so often, you know, depression, it, it's not always easy to choose joy when darkness is present. What we're sort of naming here, I think, is that when joy sneaks up on you, which it does, if we're in the moment, notice how the depression or whatever it is can be there. And then, wow, I just appreciated that early sunset, you know, and the pinks and the blues. Notice that, that's allowed to be there even when darkness is present. So don't get locked in. We get locked into darkness and it becomes our storyline. It becomes our narrative. It becomes our identity.
Yeah, totally.
And then we miss all these moments.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I was kind of trying to say as well. It's like a choice to allow yourself to feel, you know, the joy when, like you said, when it creeps up on you. You don't know. It's really good to focus on that. And I think this is a reminder to everyone, actually, not just those that might be going through a tough time. Because as I said, like, we're on autopilot a lot. This is what I've noticed. And on the show, we talk about this quite a bit. We're always on autopilot because we don't pay attention, because we don't allow ourselves to be in the moment.
That's right.
Because it's like constantly this, like hustle culture.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Do more.
Get another podcast. Yeah. What am I learning? What should I learn? I have a friend, when she walks to the subway, she has to be on a podcast when she's walking in the subway. It's 2 minutes. And then on the subway, podcast, I'm learning, I'm striving, I'm growing. And then we she gets all these kudos. Oh my God, you're a lifelong learner. And it's a way of living where we're never where we are. We have to be achieving and being productive. Well, that's a recipe for not joy.
Yeah.
Joy happens a lot in the stopping, in the silence, in the being. Mm. It really does.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful. Well, we've covered a lot about joy, like a lot of new insights. Yes. And I think it'll take time to truly digest what you just talked about. But now let's get a bit more practical. So I know we mentioned mindfulness before, and mindfulness is one of the practices that we've mentioned a few times on this show at least a few times.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you have any other practice that you personally use to cultivate more joy in your life.
Yes. So again, it starts with this stop what's going on again in the circus, right? And drop down into the body. We have to get embodied. That is the first practice. So for me, every hour or so, I take a real conscious breath and I just feel where I am. Where are my feet? Where is my, you know, seat? What's the air on my skin? I drop in out of doing, thinking mind, and I drop into being. And I tell myself, stop talking to yourself. We're going to be now. Stop talking to yourself. Because that's what we're doing all the time in our minds, is talking. And then, you know, you take a conscious breath. You tune into what's happening in the sensorial world. And then, as I said, you start to notice what's going on in the mind, right? And then we just sort of drop the doer. We drop the doer for a little bit. We let our mind be on holiday. Right? And we can bring in something if we want. But again, that's a mind's job. We're going to bring in maybe something that feels in the body delicious to us and joyful. So we're filling up the body with this golden sort of this sparkle, right? We don't need that because again, then you're using the mind. But the primary practice is stop and drop. And you're going to be so surprised that joy, when you drop out of the stories and the what you need to do and how, where you need to be and who you need to be and what's wrong and who did what to who. And if I can have that conversation back and you just get still and get quiet, it's like a miracle every time, but there's kind of joy awaiting you. So we do this throughout the day, right? And then as we've been talking about, we land where you are, be in that, pay attention to what this bite of this grilled cheese tastes like. Actually chew it mindfully, right? and notice these moments where it just feels good. It feels good to be alive, or where awe, you know, awe is such an incredible feeling. Notice when you're awed by someone's kindness, or when you're awed by the Grand Canyon, or, you know, Ayers Rock, or whatever. Just stop for a moment and notice the miracle of being alive, yeah. Right? That's something that I also offer people as a practice, which is stop every now and again and just try and contemplate the miracle of this existence. We run around with our podcasts and our, you know, to-do lists, and we're missing this incredible mystery of existing. So drop in there when you can.
Yeah, I love that. And here's the golden question. What are the three good things about this practice?
Wow, joy, joy, joy. Joy, joy, joy. Joy, yeah. Happiness, and well-being, right? And I would say too, you know, you get your life, right? You know, Mary Oliver, the great poet, she said, you know, what are you going to do with this one wild and precious life? And when you're present and living that way, paying attention and not lost in thought constantly, and being who you should be, what happens is that you feel this sense that you are infusing yourself in your own life. And while it may be a brief one and it may be impermanent in all of its ways, you're in it. You're tasting it. You are living it. So we don't go to the end saying, where was I? That's the thing that scares me the most. Where was I? Well, let's be here now.
Yeah, totally. Oh, I love that. And I wonder how often you do this.
Every day, all through the day. Yeah, oh, it's not, wow. You know, practice is about baby steps many times. It's not about some grand enlightenment. Now I'm a mindful person. We are wired and we live in a culture that is the antithesis of joy and the antithesis of well-being and the antithesis of mindfulness. So while we talk about it, you know, and it's become this great concept and everyone talks about it, 1,000 books are written about it, we talk about it as another way of not being it, right? Becomes another concept, another thing that, you know, is our cocktail conversation. That's not it. So I would say really think about mindfulness and joy as baby step practices, right? Where is there joy in this moment? What can I experience? You know, I get a lot of stomach aches, and all through the day, I stop. I can't tell you, I must do this at least 5-6 times a day. And I say, what's it feel like to not have a stomach ache? And I'm in touch with joy all right there, right there. Or I just say, what does that breeze feel like? And I invite myself into the present moment. And so joy is a practice of little tiny moments and many, many times throughout the day.
Yeah, beautiful. I love that. It's better than say, oh yeah, do this once a day and you'll find joy. No, I really love that you're just infusing it into our daily lives and just do that as many times as possible.
Yes, yes, yeah. Exactly.
Fantastic. Okay, I think we can continue to talk about joy for as long as we want to, because there's so much more, I'm sure, because, you know, this life is complex. There are so many different aspects to it. But I think we can close that there for now. Yeah. And let's talk about something else. So before we close, we have open mic. This is your chance to talk about anything and everything you're passionate about. I know that you have a topic in mind already, especially with the book that you just released recently.
Yes.
And I love that topic. So please take it away. I would love to hear what you have to talk about today.
I am passionate, as I said before, and I will say again at the risk of repeating myself, at unraveling the way primarily women, we've been conditioned from the time we're very little to be what's wanted. And women land in my office so often where they don't even know who they are anymore. They have spent their lives being everything to everyone, and they're burnt out. And they are, for some, very anxious, fatigued, resentful and not okay. And, you know, the methods that we use are we Netflix it, or we brownie it, or we Chardonnay it, or we, you know, Xanax it, right? And these are not skillful means. So we don't really know at some point in our life what we really need. And for a lot of women, you know, we've raised kids, or we've been what we created careers, and we've done all of these things. And then the time comes and I say, well, what do I want? What do I need? And it's a big blank space. So I am passionate about what are the steps when you get there, when you realize that you've learned that to take care of yourself, you have to abandon yourself, or you've learned that it's more important to have relationships with other people than a relationship with yourself. So how do we befriend ourselves again where we're on our own side? I take people through the steps of that process where, you know, you actually want to know your truth and you're willing to speak it, to say it out loud and unlink your saying your truth from how people experience that, right? It's really, so many women who come to my workshops and so on, they describe it as, you brought me home to me, a place I had left so long ago. And when we do that, what we're really doing is rediscovering our vitality. We're walking around, you know, serving this and serving that and being this and being that and, you know, being all good things to all good people. But in the process, we are drip, 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 pouring our inherent energy right out, right down the drain. So we need to gather that back up so that we can live this Mary Oliver's one wild and precious life fully.
Yeah, what a beautiful message to close with. Thank you so much for being here and talking about your work, talking about joy. As I said, I probably will have to listen to our conversation again to digest all the information, because anything that we discuss is pretty much in the moment. You know, that's how we were bouncing ideas. But I'm sure there's so much more that we can do. And I love that we can start practicing the practice of stopping and dropping right now. And yeah, like I'm certainly going to do that right after this. Yes. So thank you for that. I really enjoyed the conversation. Hopefully you enjoyed it as much as I did.
Very much.
And before I let you go, how can our listeners find out more about your work if they want to get in touch or get to know more about you?
So, and I just want to add one thing too, you know, in your practice going forward for all your listeners and all of us, you know, just putting a hand on your heart or on your abdomen, it's so powerful because we remember, oh, right, there's something below this bundle of crazy thoughts, right? There's, there's a space here. So I always encourage people, just put your hand on your heart, right? It's physical and it's powerful. But if people want to find my books, everything is on Amazon or wherever your books are sold. They're everywhere. And my website, and I love when people respond and raise questions on the website, and is nancycollier.com with one L. And I'm at N Collier on Twitter, and I'm on social and wherever I need to be, and hopefully not too often. If you have anything that you want to share about your experience of the book, please share it and we can get in dialogue, because that's how you're my field research, all of you. And that's how I learn too, and keep offering what I think will nourish.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that. And as I said, really great conversation we just had. I hope our audience will get in touch with you or find
sign
out more about your work.
Sign up for the mailing list,
read your books.
Yes.
I'll definitely put that on the list as well. And hopefully we'll have you back some other time.
My pleasure. Such a delight. Thank you, Lou.
Thank you, Nancy.
You've been listening to Sarah Boost, the Happiness Science Insights podcast, produced by the Happiness Science Labs, a division of LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. More episodes are available from 10 Life Management Perspectives and can be found by searching LMSL on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, YouTube, and other podcasting apps available on your devices. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, share, and subscribe to our channel so that other people can find it and we can continue to provide quality content. More of our work can be found on our website at ha.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Lu Ngo. Thanks for tuning in.